You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly talk show on Brooklyn's Radio, when we spend an hour talking to some very interesting local women about subjects surrounding their work, lives, children, as well as their amazing experiences. So I'm Mandy Dynley, and today I'm delighted to be here again with David Gemmatis, who will be working the desk so that I can concentrate totally on our lovely guests. Thanks, David. So let's get on with the show and meet our lovely ladies. On today's show, we have some really interesting guests. First up, we have Aarti Sharma Gray, director of Once Upon a Bus, talking about a magical storytelling bus, followed by Alexandra Williams and Samantha Pantlin, talking all things antenatal. And finally, we have Helen Hart. She's a freelance lawyer and legal writer talking about technology, marketing and consumer law. We are absolutely delighted to have them all on the show, and we're really looking forward to learning about their various businesses. So before I introduce our first guest, I just want to read this to you. Picture this: a sparkling double-decker bus is parked in a school playground. A class of children climb aboard, not to go on a physical journey, but instead to be taken on a trip through the imagination. Now, that is part of Once Upon a Bus, and I'd love to welcome our first guest, Aarti Sharma Gray.
Hello there, Mandy. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. It's great to have you here. So can you tell us all about this Once Upon a Bus? Because it sounds just amazing.
Of course I can. So 5 years ago, myself and my husband came up with an idea. So I was turning 40. And I was working in IT at the time, but working in pre-sales, which a lot of it, you have to make it quite interesting. So a lot of it's storytelling and storyboarding. So I decided, that's it. I'm going to actually become a storyteller. So we came up with this idea of using storytelling in a slightly different way. So children aren't just looking at us and, you know, listening to us. They actually become immersed in the story using puppets and actually reading with us. So that was all great, but then we came up with the idea of, like, well, actually, how about if we could go to the schools? How can we actually reach people? So after a couple of bottles of wine...
that's always a good plan.
It's always a good plan until the morning. But after a couple of bottles of wine, we decided to buy the bus. So I rang up, and it's very, very easy to buy a bus, and quite cheap to buy a double-decker bus, believe it or not.
No, I had no idea.
And this is where the story just unfolds, because I rang up a few companies, and one of them, Quality, who actually designed our bus and equipped it for us. The guy, you're not going to believe this, but his name was Robin Hood. So I was like, that's it, we're definitely going for it. My husband, who is he's a design genius, he will be listening, so that's an extra point for me.
Oh, great. Well done.
He designed the inside of the bus, and we've just done a wonderful job of making it incredibly sensory, using natural light such as stained glass windows and everything.
I saw those stained glass windows, they look incredible. So as you're reading a story, the light streaming through the windows. And
correct, yeah, that's right. We have two areas of the bus, actually. So we've got the downstairs of the bus, which we use as a sensory area. In this particular area as well, we use it a lot for children who have got special needs. So if they find upstairs a bit too much, they can actually sit in the sensory area and watch the storytelling on screen. And it's all mic'd all the way through, so they can always hear what we're doing as well. Whereas upstairs, we can have a classroom full of children, so up to 35 children.
Wow, that's a proper class size,
it's
isn't it?
Proper class, yeah. So generally, it's mostly schools that do hire us. What we pride ourselves in is following the curriculum. We'll also look at the curriculum, like, for example, if they're doing Best of British, what kind of stories could you use, like Alice in Wonderland, for example? We also rewrite the scripts, so we make sure that the children have parts to play, so it's all very immersive.
It's amazing.
The other part to it as well is that we do also welcome adults on board. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time you'll see me dressing up adults or auditioning them to be like the Queen of Hearts, for example. And within that, it's all about encouraging children and adults to bond together. A lot of the time you'll say to your children, go on, go and do it yourself, you know, you get up there. And half the time adults themselves won't do it. So it's about actually leading, you know, and showing them that you can actually do it yourselves.
You're absolutely right, because say, for example, on Halloween, you know, I would always dress up with my children just for fun. I mean, we'd keep it non-scary, I have to say, when they're little. But and I think it brings it all alive, and they look, it sounds incredible. So can you tell me, when you walk onto your bus, what's the first thing that a child would see as they walk on?
So they'll go past the sensory area. Well, actually, there's two parts to the bus, as I said.
Yes,
so
yeah.
If, for example, we do a forest theme, then we'll take them upstairs to the top of the bus, where they'll come into it. There's grass on the floor. They'll be sitting on the floor. And basically, there'll be myself and my colleague, Jane, who works alongside me. She's absolutely fabulous. Used to be on CBeebies. So,
yeah. Oh,
she's great. But so they come on board, and basically, we'll start a session with them, usually by making sure their imagination is open. And how I do that is through them an invisible imagination key, which also opens up listening ears. So they put their listening ears on, and if they hear me do this, it means it's fallen off. So we can try and engage them throughout it all. After we usually do a forest scene, we sometimes take them downstairs, where we'd make it into the underwater bus. So again, doing different stories which are pertinent to that. One of our major ones is the Whale Project. So we do a story called Dear Greenpeace, which always goes down well, and we have a captain on board who is Greenpeace himself.
But it's, I mean, it just sounds really, I would just love it. As an adult, it sounds really interesting. I mean, you know, the way that you're entertaining them, it almost sounds like a promenade within a promenade performance, although it's not quite, but it must open up their imagination beyond just sitting there, which is great in a classroom, because imagination's so important, but you're giving them more to think about, aren't you?
Yeah, I think.
And feel.
And one of the other philosophies with us is that not all children like picking up a book to read it. You know, I'm one of those as well, that I don't particularly like reading books, because I like to read about three or four at the same time. My concentration's not that great. So I prefer audiobooks, for example. I prefer music being played. So we use all these different stimuli to really sort of get their sensories going. So
So how does it work then? So you obviously, schools are one of your main points of interest, I would think, your main customers. So do they, I mean, I know you spoke about PTAs. PTAs must go crazy for you, because I've been on PTAs and I would be wanting to book you, you know, every year.
Yeah, so we do. We have a lot of PTAs. We've done over about 250 schools.
Yeah.
With PTAs, we help them fundraise as well. So they'll book us, and then they'll sell tickets in order for children to come on board. We also have, like I said, all different themes. So at Christmas, for example, the bus is turned into a grotto. Oh. So downstairs will be Father Christmas himself. And on the top, we'll do the storytelling, like the night before Christmas, where we conjure up Father Christmas, and he comes up the stairs, and the children are just so delighted. It's probably one of my favourite things to do.
Oh, I can imagine.
So it's all good, and it also ensures that, you know, every day I can be creative as well. We can come up with different stories and different ways in which we can really get those imaginations going. We've also done quite a few hosting. So we hosted Barnes Film Festival last year, and I've also, we have our own festival that we're part of called Five Fest.
Okay, what do you do? What happens there then?
So in Fife Fest, which is happening on July the 13th, that's the plug.
Oh, right. Okay, so where is that?
It's in Fifield.
Fifield, okay.
Yeah. And basically you have some music stations going on, some great musical people. Do you remember Rosala?
Yes.
An urban cookie crew?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And on the other side of it, we've got the Kids Zone, which I'll be hosting. So they'll have like a big play pits, role plays, as well as Once Upon a Bus. The whole thing about it though is to have entertainment in an educational way.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not just plastics and things like that. We want to really, really engage them. My husband is also the bubble man. So have you seen those giant bubbles?
Yes.
Yeah. So he actually makes them himself. So as part of our science module, we show them how to put them together. So he'll be there. And I've just cut my hair all off, because I'm going to be Freddie Mercury that day. So there's commitment.
Oh, well, that really is commitment. Was your hair really long before then?
Yes, it was very long, so yeah.
Oh my goodness, that is a massive commitment. But so you're creating this lovely little area for the children at the Fifield Festival, did you say?
It's called Fifest.
Sorry, yeah. Fifest. So do people have to book online or can they pay on the door?
So you book online, so it's www.fifest.co.uk, and tickets are £15 just for the whole day.
And they've got access to everything?
They do, yes.
No extra charges once
they're
in there?
No extra charges.
Lovely.
No, it's a very, very nice family day out, I have to say.
Yeah.
But on top of that, we do also do other events. Like we've done Royal Hampton Court.
Yes. Yeah, what do you do there then?
So
similar?
No, they've actually hired us with the bus itself. So we just storytell on the bus itself.
Do you dress up in traditional costumes then?
Of course. I'm a woodland elf. That's my job title, really. But today I thought I'd come as myself. But yes, I mean, if we're doing Alice in Wonderland, I'll be Alice. All kinds of people. Mm. Like I said, Freddie Mercury's a...
So when Hampton Court book you, do they ask you to do a specific thing or do you suggest what might work better for them?
Yeah, so the couple of times that we've done it for them, they had a space theme. So when we wrote a space module for them. And then another time was an insect theme. So we'll look at some stories and we'll put them together for people. So, you know, again, we've got some great script writers. So
what about the costumes then? Because you obviously need a fair amount of costumes. How do you access those costumes?
I've had my elf costume made for me.
Yeah.
But other ways, you can get some really nice costumes from on the internet. We usually browse for some good quality ones. So last year, for example, at a festival I was the Greatest Showman. So,
yeah. Oh, the music's amazing for that, isn't it? So did you have the red coat and the hat?
I did.
Brilliant.
Unfortunately, I'm a storyteller, not a singer. So I had to get other people to come in and sing. But it was great because we had we involved all the children from the area and a gymnastics team who all did their individual things for the show.
My mind is just, I mean, it's you've my imagination is great anyway, I think, because I just love storytelling. But I can't imagine anything more fantastic for the children to go onto a lovely bus and have all these stories read to them. So is there, how many buses do you have?
Well, our drive's only big enough for the one.
Yeah. Do you keep it on your drive?
We do keep it on our driveway.
So you're going to get to a point where you're going to need another one, aren't you, maybe?
Well, I mean, we love our bus. And, people have asked, can we franchise it?
Yes, you know, I was going to ask that.
Because a lot of the times we get asked to go up north, but, you know, can you imagine the bus, it goes only 55 miles
an hour. I was going to ask you that as well, yeah. So what is the distance that you'll travel?
So usually we go into London, it would be about 100 miles.
And where are you based again?
In Bray.
In Bray, okay. Yes. So anybody out there, within 100 miles...
Come and book us.
Yes. And actually, I suppose if you franchise it, it would take away the individuality, maybe.
I think that's what it is. You know, it's sort of our baby, our brand, the only one in the UK. So it's very hard to let go of that. I'm a bit of a control freak. my husband would say I'm a bit like David Brent. He told me to mention that, but I said I'll behave today.
I don't think you're anything like David Brent.
Thank you.
He certainly wouldn't wear peach anyway.
No, exactly.
There's a bit of colour on the radio. So, I can imagine if you franchised it, it would take away the individuality and it wouldn't make it so special, I suppose. But... I just think it's such a great idea.
Thank you.
So I wanted to ask you, because you say the bus is self-sufficient, it's got its own lavatory, kitchen area.
And generator. That means that we can just turn up anywhere and turn our generator on. And so that will, all the lights will be working and everything. So we're self-sufficient. But we can also plug in as well if needs be.
So in the winter, they can be warm.
Oh, in the winter, we're hot.
And in the summer
we're cold. That's right. Air conditioning. Great.
God, that's brilliant. So you say it was launched on May the 10th, 2014. So you're still quite a new business.
Yeah. I mean, we launched in 2014. Obviously, a year of it was quite hard marketing because nobody had ever seen anything like it before. And in fact, the lovely Paul Daniels and Debbie McGee opened it up for us. We did have over 1,000 people attend our launch,
brilliant.
which was great stuff. But... you know, I had a bit of a dip because I did break my leg. And I do need to do another shout out to the Weybridge physios opposite me, because I had magic hands Rob Marlowe, who's fixed me.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, so I wonder if he's been on the show. We'll have to get him on the
you
show.
You should do.
So you say here that since the launch, which we can tell, Once Upon a Bus has gone from strength to strength. And you're saying it's an opportunity for the parent and carers to engage in a positive and productive social environment, which I think is so important these days. And can you tell us the sort of people that you have? Obviously, we understand school children. What about other children that you have benefited from this fantastic thing?
So previously to working in IT, I used to run a homeless hostel. And also used to work with children with special needs. So we do pride ourselves in being able to deliver the same option, but to children with Down syndrome, autistic children, so all types of diversities. As well, we also try and encourage children with second language, English with their second language, so we can help with that, again, by using just different medium to help them engage in storytelling.
I think you've really put so much thought into this. It's incredible. I could talk to you for so long. We're coming to the end of the programme. It just goes so quick, doesn't it?
It does.
But this is the point where we usually ask our guests for some advice. So have you got any particular message you'd like to share with our listeners today, particularly perhaps someone who would like to organise Once Upon a Bus, visiting their school or charity?
Do you work with charities? Of course, yes. We work with charities. We work with anybody. With storytellers, everybody loves a good story.
Private parties?
Private parties. In fact, I've done a 50th. Where I was Willy Wonka.
Oh,
so yeah, we cater for anyone. So
what do they need? Oh, well, we're going to get the contact details in a moment. Yeah. So is that what they would do? They get in touch with you and
talk about their requirements. And we also with our experience put schedules together for them, because in essence, we can get over 300 children through the bus in one day.
Oh, that's great.
So it's great for going into schools.
Yeah. So that gives our listeners out there an idea how that could work. So how would they get in touch with you? Have you got a website?
We have a website, so it's onceuponabus.com, or you can call Artie the Elf. Can I give my number?
If you want to,
yep,
why not?
It's 07912101619.
Thank you, Artie. So that was Artie Sharma Gray. We're now going to take a short break, after which we will be talking to Alexandra Williams and Samantha Pantlin. They are the Naked Midwives.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. Picture this, a Sunday lunchtime carvery where you can eat as much as you want with a choice of one, two or three courses. You're free to help yourself to succulent pork, beef, chicken or gammon. And if you wish, you can have them all. Add in a homely, family-orientated environment with free parking, and you have your perfect destination for the perfect Sunday lunch. It's all here at the Best Western Ship Hotel by Monument Green, High Street, Weybridge. Book now on 0800 393 130. We're one of the most welcoming places to eat in Weybridge.
You don't have to be in Surrey to hear Brooklyn's Radio, and with our brand new free app, it's even easier to take the sound of Surrey with you. Download the app to your mobile device to be just one click away from music, entertainment and all of the local news that you need. Plus, you can instantly access our social media feeds, keeping your finger on the Surrey pulse. Our app is available on all Android devices through Google Play and on your Apple products through the App Store. You can also find out more details on the website www.brooklynsradio.co.uk. So whether listening near or far, take the sound of Surrey wherever you are with the new free app from Brooklyn's Radio.
Hi, I'm Bria Gosling. Join me on Sunday evening from 8 till 10. I'll be featuring all the best singer-songwriters past and present, and the latest hit tracks and tunes. Plus, there'll be interviews with the movers and shakers in the music industry, live lounge and buskers booth. So grab a glass of fun and cool tracks and join me on Brooklyn's Radio this Sunday evening at 8. Or catch the repeat on Wednesday night at 10.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Mandy Dineley. And now I'm really happy to welcome Alex Williams and Samantha Pantlin to the show. And they are the Naked Midwives, but I have to tell you, they're not naked. That is just their name. And it is a daytime show, so we're okay. What I want to ask you both is how and why you started the Naked Midwives, starting with a little bit of background info about yourselves.
Okay, well, thank you for having us.
Lovely to have you.
So Sam and I met at university doing our midwifery degree, and then we were lucky enough to get our first job together at Southampton Hospital. Then, as I think a couple of years into that, I had a bit of an accident whereby my right-hand side got crushed. So I was off work for quite a long time with that, and during that time was really sort of thinking about how I'd be able to manage working as a midwife, long shifts, night shifts, always on your feet. So we got together, didn't we? And we had a few
ideas. Just talking about all different options and things that we could do. And we were talking about, obviously, being a midwife, you talk about work a lot and the women that you've met on the wards and things like that. And it struck us that we were seeing time and time again women ending up on labour ward for whatever reason and feeling like they failed or they'd done something wrong. And it's almost like birth education hasn't kept up with obstetrics and maternity care. So women were coming in with wrong expectations of birth. So we just, as women, that upsets us. But as midwives, we thought, well, maybe there's something that we can do about this.
So you were in the perfect place to be able to see how women were suffering and struggling. And you know that's been an issue for years.
Yeah. And it's not just about the birth. If you've got the right education on board, you can still feel positive about the outcome, regardless of the type of birth or the type of delivery that you've had.
Do you know, I remember somebody said to me when I was having my first, they said, you might book for Rome, but you might end up with
exactly
on the train.
And I think actually that's, you know, and as long as mums recognise that, but they don't, do they? So that's what you do. You help them from what point do you help them from then?
They tend to book on with us from about 26 weeks. Our classes are in a series of three.
Yeah.
So the first one, we talk about everything very straightforward delivery. We try not to use the word normal because they haven't had a baby before, so they don't have a normal. Straightforward delivery and the kind of pain relief that you could expect in a low risk environment. The second class, we do everything a bit more high risk, cesarean section, pain relief and induction. And on the last class, we talk about breastfeeding and, I don't know if you remember, coming home, shutting the front door and thinking, oop, I've come home with a baby. I can't keep a plant alive.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I can't do this. I'm not a grown up.
And it's very social as well. So we always finish the last class a little bit earlier and we go to the bar and buy a drink and set up a WhatsApp group so people are making friends as well.
Oh, yeah, lovely. So it sounds a little bit cool as well. I mean, I love the name. Yeah. And you know I do. When I first met you, I absolutely love the name. But do men come along as all partners?
Partners. Yeah, definitely. And that's a really important part of the class as well.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we really focus on, I think, because as time's gone by now, I think going back to the 70s, men, you know, I don't know if you know Michel Odont, he was a French obstetrician, and he had this sort of theory whereby he thought men shouldn't go into birth rooms because it would have a negative impact on the woman in labour. So, and there's, you know, partly that is true because men didn't know what to expect. And actually men these days are very much involved, but they do feel a little bit left out because of all the antenatal care. Generally, you know, it's just the women that we see coming for their antenatal care.
Or they feel in the way.
Feel in the way, and they just don't, they just really don't know what to expect or how to cope with seeing their loved one in pain. So we focus a lot on the guys, and we sort of have this little thing called, you know, we call our guys the guardians of oxytocin. They are a massive part of the early stages of labour, and I think that's what we all forget, is that we're not expecting women to actually go into wherever they're having their babies until they're in established labour. So all that, the early stages of labour, when you're at home and it's just you and your birth partner, that's actually quite a difficult and scary time, and there's not many people that provide education around that. So we give them jobs, don't we?
If the birth partner kind of knows what to do and how to manage that, that's going to avoid them coming to their place of birth. And we've seen it before, the women saying, well, I was absolutely fine at home, but he was freaking out. So it's just a way of them managing that time together, you know, and to feel loved and safe and secure and nurturing, because they're having a baby together. It's not just the woman having the baby.
Mm. And, you know, you're helping the hospitals as well. You're helping the maternity wards, because I should imagine a lot of women go in early, which happened to me, and go home again.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they think, oh.
And that can set you back.
Yes.
So it's just managing, like we say, managing expectations and knowing what to expect and knowing what questions to ask. So if you do go in early, and if that's right for you, then that's the right thing to do. But if you do go in early and you end up going home, you go home feeling empowered that you can do it, because
you've asked the right questions
and you know where your baby is and you know what's happening with your cervix and things like that.
Yes, because those are the things that, you know, the partner, whether they're male or female, you don't necessarily know what's going on with your cervix, do you, to be honest?
No, not at all.
It's something you don't really talk about until you get pregnant.
We do this funny thing where we use Play-Doh. And we give everybody a piece of Play-Doh and say, right, you need to mould a cervix.
What you think it looks like.
What you think your cervix
And you haven't given them any clues.
No clues whatsoever.
And we've had an anaesthetist and, you know, other people on the course that haven't had a clue. And it's really important that they understand exactly what's happening to their bodies.
Yes.
And not just the women, because at that point they're in labour. So actually the guys are there as a voice as well for the women. So it's just empowering couples together, really, to make a positive experience. Yeah.
So how can I ask you, if a normal class, or I mean, I know they vary because obviously each class is different in content, but if you were to have a class, how would it work from start to finish, and how long does it last for, and is it every week?
So there are a series of three.
So
they start at 6:30 and they finish at 9:00. So, like I said before, with the first one is everything low risk, second one is the higher risk and induction and pain relief, and the third class is bringing the baby home. So that's how they kind of separated.
Right.
But then once somebody's done a class with us, we don't just kind of wave them goodbye and say, nice knowing you. They have email or telephone access to a midwife who's with part of the Naked Midwives group for any kind of non-urgent inquiries. Mm. Or if their plan changes, so if they develop a condition or something later in their pregnancy, which means now they need to go into hospital to birth rather than their birth centre, so they can come back and talk to us about that and then get a bit more education on board.
It's pretty much one-to-one, really, isn't it? The courses are tailored to the individual needs, so, and we're always there if Sam says, if anything changes. We do a lot of story sharing, which we find is quite a positive thing, because people like to hear about birth stories.
Yeah, they do, especially when they're...
So we do a lot of that. And we also use the equipment. So we use the equipment that you might see if you go to labour ward.
So we have forceps. And we have the Vontus cup that
goes
into his head.
Yes,
it just
really
kind of
good.
Takes the fear out of it. And the language, we use the language that they're going to hear when they're in their birth setting, so they know what people are talking about.
That's really good because, I mean, I'm not going to run down anything that I had before, because it was really good, but it's very serious. But I didn't know about the Vontus, and my son was not going to be born without the Vontus.
Yeah.
And it was too late for a cesarean at that point.
Yeah.
And it was quite scary, I have to admit, especially when the nurse...
The stirrups come out, and I thought, goodness me,
but if I had been told or had recognised the language they were speaking, it probably... I mean, it was okay in the end, obviously. But it's so reassuring, and it sounds fun, and it sounds
real.
Really
good fun. Yeah, and we've met such
lovely
people.
You do, I can see
We do. We absolutely love
it. And we've been really lucky. Some of the people that have done our classes, because we're quite a new business, one chap is really good at doing franchises, so he's given us some time, and somebody else does like employment law and things like that, so he's good. So everybody kind of wants to give back to us as well, so we've been really fortunate.
So have you thought about franchising then, because you mentioned
we have thought about franchise. We're running a pilot franchise in Southampton at the moment. But ultimately our goal is that women have a positive birth regardless of the mode of delivery. So by doing sort of like a Naked Midwives course anywhere in the country, hopefully at one point.
I think that's brilliant.
That's kind of what we're trying to achieve.
We're also
speaking to somebody about doing an online course, so people can download it.
Good. People are so busy these days.
Exactly.
If they haven't got time to, or if they've got other children and they didn't have that with the first one and they'd like...
We do one-to-one classes as well for people that are having a subsequent birth, if they've got any kind of unresolved issues from their first delivery. So we go through that with them as well.
Gosh, that's brilliant.
And we're working.
We're midwives for the NHS.
So I guess as well, it's a social thing, because I know I made quite a few
friends with
my antenatal NCT
And you need
groups.
Your mummy friends, because when you're 3 o'clock in the morning and you're breastfeeding and you're yeah. feeling rubbish.
Yeah, and it was really yeah, it was really lovely actually because we did a reunion, didn't we, recently? So we just had a lot of the people that have done the courses, I think, over the past sort of three months or so.
Because you're part of something that is so special.
Yeah.
And I know from my experience how much I think of the people that were involved in my early days, especially my first. And you always stay with the parents.
And as a midwife, it's the best job in the world. It's a privilege. It really is. And when you see a couple come in and then they go home a family, it's really special.
It is really, it makes me cry.
It makes us cry too. If the dad starts crying, that's
the end. Yes.
I know it is when guys cry, but that means that you've done a great job.
Yeah.
That means that you've done a great job. And I don't know how many, you know, facilities there are like yours out there. I haven't heard of anything else like that. It's either NCT or antenatal.
Yeah.
And they all have something really good to offer. But I love the fact that this is accessible to so many.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you, you do offer support afterwards, don't you, with, you said one of your classes... For breastfeeding,
we quite often do breastfeeding pop-ups. So just sort of like in little cafes that are just, you know, a couple of pounds to come to just to cover the cost. And again, that helps women make friends. And we talk about breastfeeding and getting the position and the attachment right, and all that kind of stuff.
What a great idea!
Yeah. The breastfeeding—that's an ongoing learning curve, I think, when you have a baby and you haven't done it before.
Yeah, because actually babies don't always latch on in the same way.
And society's not very good at promoting breastfeeding. You never see it in the back of the pub on the soap opera or anything like that.
But to meet in a cafe, you've conquered that fear of feeding in public.
Exactly,
And B, you've got all these other women around you who are feeling the same, but actually united in their sort of
And they're comfortable because they know us. So they've met us before. Not all the women, but generally it's the women that have done the courses.
Yeah.
So when we do offer support up to 10 days, so, and it's lovely for us as well, isn't it? Because we get to go around and see the baby as well, you know, as well as helping the mums, you know, and it's just really lovely.
And of course there are some mums that aren't able to breastfeed, and that's absolutely fine and perfect.
Yeah. We like fed babies. Yeah. Actually, we don't care how you feed your baby.
That's brilliant.
We want a fed baby.
Yeah.
And a happy mum.
And not a stressed mum, and a mum feeling incompetent because she has.
And if you're crying every time your baby wakes up for a feed, that's not very nice for anybody in the family.
Because you want to enjoy those moments with your baby, and if you're stressing about feeding, you're not enjoying, and your baby will obviously pick up on
those
vibes.
And as parents of older children, we know that time just goes by in a flash.
Yes, it does.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, I could do that again.
You're pretty busy now.
I'm a braver woman than me.
So you're based in Bournemouth, is that right?
We live in Bournemouth. We work in Southampton.
Okay,
so our classes are in Hampshire and Dorset at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. So at the moment, that's where they are.
Yeah.
So, Hampshire, how far up?
Southampton and Whiteley, which is near Portsmouth.
Yes, okay.
And we're doing a pop-up class in Weybridge on the 21st of September. We're just finalising venue and things like that.
Okay,
we haven't finalised the venue yet.
We've just got the date.
Yeah, we've just got the date, and we're going to have details of that on the website towards the end of next week.
Oh, right.
So that's going to be like a very early stage of labour. So when you're at home, managing things at home, jobs for the birth partner.
Okay.
How not to panic.
I think it's where the birth journey begins, I think that's called.
Okay.
So it's all the early stages.
And what date was that again, did you say?
It's Saturday, the 21st of September.
Okay, well, we'll come onto the website in a minute. I can't believe it. We've come to the end of our time.
It's gone so quick.
In the blink of an eye. So it's been brilliant chatting
with you,
ladies.
Fabulous. Thank
you. So I just need to ask if you have any particular advice you want to share with our listeners, particularly those who are looking for a new kind of antenatal group. What would you say?
Definitely make sure whoever is delivering your classes has got the right qualifications. So we work from our perspective as a midwife. So and I think that's really important. The other thing I think is that's really important is choose your birth partner wisely. Might not always be a partner.
That's true.
But you're under pressure to have your partner there, and your partner's under pressure to be there. But actually, if it's something neither of you particularly want, if your birth partner's going to sit in the corner on their phone,
yes, because actually it's not for everybody.
Your best friend or your sister might be better,
and they shouldn't feel bad about
absolutely. Yeah.
So can I just ask you?
Yeah.
Sorry, we're racing ahead.
I know.
But one more thing: how will people get in touch with you? Can you give us your email, website address?
The website is thenakedmidwives.co.uk. and email admin@thenakedmidwives. We're on Facebook and we're on Instagram as well under The Naked Midwives.
Brilliant. And I'm sure our listeners will be getting in touch, those who will need your services in the future. So, oh, I can't believe it's gone so quick. Thank you so much. We're just going to take another short break, after which we'll be talking all things legal with Helen Hart.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7am to 11pm weekdays, 7am to 9pm Saturdays, and 10am to 4pm on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Brooklyn's Radio's audience is growing. Potential listeners are listening, but are they hearing your message? Maybe you're saying to yourself, I don't know about internet radio, or maybe I should wait. Well, instead, think about it this way. Do you want to be one of the first businesses like yours to advertise on internet radio? Or the last? So why not tap into the power of Brooklyn's Radio easily and affordably? Contact Fiona through sales@brooklynsradio.co.uk. That's sales@brooklynsradio.co.uk. Brooklyn's Radio. Loving Surrey Radio. Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm John Axtell of Guildford Astronomical Society. Join me and Dave Gemitus for Stars Over Surrey. We'll be looking at recent developments in space and giving you the essential guide to sky watching in the coming month. That's Stars Over Surrey. The last Friday of the month at 7:20pm on Brooklyn's Radio, repeated at 11pm on the following Monday.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Mandy Dynley, together with David Gemitus, who's helping on the... He's doing the desk, actually. So our third lovely guest on today's show is Helen Hart. And Helen is a freelance lawyer and legal writer. Helen, welcome to Just Women.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's brilliant to have you on here. So what I'd like you to do, first of all, is just give us a little bit of background about yourself and finish off with telling me why you chose law.
I chose law. I always actually wanted to study German at university, and I knew that from about 12 years old, but I didn't really know what to do with it, to do something. My parents told me I had to do something useful. So I ended up studying law and German, and I deliberately then chose the subjects on my degree that you need to do to qualify as a solicitor. And then I got offered a training contract by one of the large law firms in London. So that's how I ended up becoming a lawyer. So it was sort of vaguely accidental, really.
So what about prior to all of that then? How did you, what was the sort of early days of you, sort of, you know, your journey towards becoming a lawyer then before that? Was that...
In terms of when I was at university,
yes,
what I did then.
So
one of the things I was quite interested in doing was becoming a journalist, which is sort of how I've got to where I am now with writing about law. And I worked with two different legal publishers for about 10 years across the two companies. I worked on the student newspaper and I enjoyed that, but decided that it probably wasn't going to be very difficult to... it was going to be difficult to get into as a career. And because I was offered the job as a lawyer, I thought I'd do that first off and see where it took me. And where it took me eventually was working at British Gas. And that was about 20 years ago now.
How long did you work for British Gas?
I worked for them for about 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And the main thing that I did while I was there was looking after their marketing materials. And it was sort of... partly pre-internet, so it was mainly press adverts, TV, radio adverts, and also all their direct marketing in the days when it was letters through the door.
Yeah.
So I advised on all the copy, and it was at a time when the energy market was opening up to competition, so it was very cutthroat. They were losing all their gas customers, not all of them, but they were losing them quite quickly, so they obviously wanted to keep hold of as many gas customers as possible while gaining as many electricity customers as possible. So their sales and marketing teams were under quite a lot of pressure to, let's say, sort of be economical with the truth at times.
Oh, okay.
You know, some of the claims they were making, they were sort of trying to come up with a marketing claim and then try and fit the product to it, as opposed to the other way round, have your product and then come up with your marketing claim. Yeah. So it was an incredibly interesting time to be there.
Yeah, it sounds quite
demanding, because it was really difficult to sort of keep everyone in line and make sure that they were, you know, treating customers properly and telling them the right things about their products. So that was that, and that's how now I've sort of ended up advising on marketing and promotions again, because that was probably the area of law I enjoyed most across my career.
Yeah. So I think specialising in a certain area, I mean, obviously with law, there's so many areas.
That's right, yeah.
But I mean, this is a huge area that you can't, you know, there's lots of people out there who want your advice. So can you tell us a little bit more, because you deal with consumer. Is it consumer or company issues that you deal with, or both?
Mainly from the perspective of the company.
Company.
So as an example, the kind of sort of thing that I would advise on is if you're out shopping in the supermarket and you pick up a packet of cornflakes, say, and they've got a competition running on the side of it. It's like, buy this product, get the code from the product, go to our website, and you could win a competition. So, I don't know, it could be a holiday, could be, you know, anything really.
Yeah.
And it can also be things like 2-for-1 offers, or, you know, buy, you normally get 200 grams, but we'll give you 250 grams for the same price, that kind of thing. But it's quite surprising how many pitfalls there can be with those kinds of promotions, in things like, oh, we'll say that, you know, we're giving you more for your money, but actually we've put the price up. So you're not really getting more for your money after all. And a really big pitfall that can happen is when people want to extend the closing dates on promotions. So it can happen for two reasons. It can be that the promotion's so successful, the company really wants to carry on running it because they're selling loads and loads of products. But on the other hand, it could be that actually the promotion isn't going very well and they don't want to give away a holiday to America if they've only sold 10 products or something.
How do they get around that? They can do that, can they?
They can't. The Advertising Standards Authority is really, really strict about it, and there have to be incredibly good reasons. So one of the things, it has to be completely out of the control of the company that's running the promotion. Mm. So for example, if you were collecting tokens off products and you had to send them in by a certain date, and then around that date there was a postal strike,
yes,
that might be the kind of thing that they would say, all right, it was acceptable to extend the promotion by a week or something like that. But it's really difficult to say, well, actually we love this promotion so much we want to carry it on. So what they end up doing is they'll finish the promotion when they were going to, but then they'll just run something very similar you know, a few weeks later with a new closing date and a new prize. And that's the way I advise people to get around it anyway.
So it's your job to make sure that all of those types of competitions are run legally.
That's right.
Within the law.
Yeah. So but also give them what they, you know, try and give them what they want as well, because the most unpopular lawyer is a lawyer who says no.
Yeah. I can imagine that.
So,
but of course, there must be times when you have to say no.
Yeah, sometimes you do. Yeah. You just say this just can't be done.
Yeah.
It's also quite interesting at times how they'll ring lawyers when they've got what it's really a practical problem. For example, I was advising on something last year where somebody had won a competition and the prize was a week's holiday in a cottage in Devon, and the husband of the winner had broken his leg. So they rang me and said, what do we do? Because they can't go on this particular date. And I said, well, have you talked to the people who run the cottage, and would they be willing to give them a different date when his leg's better? Oh, yeah, we hadn't thought of that.
Oh, my goodness. So, and that's quite a simple
thing to think it's not a legal point at all, really.
But if they said no, are the couple covered? So the couple have had an unfortunate accident. Would they, if they went to the couple who are offering the prize, would or the company that were offering the prize, and they said, no, you can't have it, sorry, it's that date and that date only, which does happen a lot.
Yes, because you could just have booked the cottage out for the entire summer.
Yeah.
I think what you'd do in that instance, you'd either say, you know, we'll give you an alternative, you know, when your husband's leg's better. It could be an alternative cottage, or you might just come up with a different prize of a similar value.
So they're not obliged. Are they obliged to give you that prize if you have a misdemeanour, sort of a little accident or something?
It would depend on the terms of the arrangement that you had with the prize provider. And I think any prize provider would do their utmost to help. But I think if you were in that situation where you literally were booked up for the whole 6 month summer period or whatever, you might have to say, well, we can only offer it next year or
which
something
is fine,
like that.
Which is actually fair enough, I think, isn't it? Gosh, there's so many. I wanted to ask you, actually, so do you have any unusual cases, not any specifics, which I know you probably won't be able to mention, but anything that you are able to share, that you've had any unusual cases?
I'm trying to think, really. I mean, the not unusual in that the closing date sort of query comes up again and again. I had another one. It was a, sort of another practical problem with a prize where they'd... I think the prize was a preview of a film or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was. And they'd said they had 150 tickets, but then they discovered that actually they only had something like 142 seats. Because some of the area is for people in wheelchairs.
Oh, right.
So they've been ringing around all the people saying, oh, you know, great news, you've won the prize. And then they suddenly realised that they didn't have enough tickets to the event. So they weren't quite sure what they were going to do. But I think what they did in the end, it's actually surprising how many people win prizes and then don't claim them or
yes.
don't actually want the prize.
Yeah.
So in the end, I said, with... you know, 150 winners and 142 tickets, the chances are you will have eight people who drop out and will be happy with some sort of alternative prize.
So that just goes to show, doesn't it? When you create a competition, do your homework.
Absolutely, yeah.
Gosh.
And, you know, you really have to think in advance. Mm. And one of the challenges that a lot of the people I work with have is that if, for example, it is on the side of a cornflake packet or something, those packets are being printed a long way in advance. I was quite surprised quite how long the lead time is. And so they're sort of printing up their packet quite a few months before they really know exactly what the details of the prize are going to be, especially if it's something like a holiday. If it's something like, you know, a buy one get one free, it's really easy. Or if it's a buy, say, four packets of something and we'll give you, you know, a free product, that's easy. But things like that, where they're planning quite a complex competition,
there's a lot to it,
yeah,
an awful lot to it. What's the most common issues? What are the most common issues? Sorry, in consumer law.
I think in terms of sort of my little niche in terms of promotions, I've sort of said it a couple of times now about the wanting to change the closing dates, changing it halfway through. You realise that it's not quite running the way you wanted it to, whether that's for a good reason or a bad reason, and you don't want to... and the Advertising Standards Authority takes a dim view of changing, you know, the terms halfway through a promotion. And actually, from a wider consumer law perspective, that's the case as well. If you're supplying a product, whether that's an item or a service, you can't suddenly say after a consumer's paid their deposit for the product or is into the contract, well, we're not going to do that now.
No, yeah. I'm surprised that people would even consider changing
but
the date, actually.
But they do.
Because that's not what people buy into, is it?
You can even think about it something like, you know, if you buy into, I don't know, something like a TV service like Sky or Virgin Media or somebody like that, and, you know, you buy it on the basis that you get certain channels, and then they lose, for whatever reason, they lose the channels halfway through the contract. And so, you know, they have to give you a chance to get out of the contract without a penalty if they're going to change things like that.
Gosh, it just shows, doesn't it, that we must read terms and conditions if we enter any competition. In fact, I was going to ask you, do you ever get involved with any of your clients who have competitions over social media?
Or yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Is that quite big at the moment? Because there's a lot of competitions on various platforms.
Yes, yeah, social media is... They that we do get a lot of people who want to run them on social media.
And do they run in a similar way then?
They do, but obviously you've got the limited space. So when you're having to make sure people are given the key points of the promotion, whatever that happens to be, you have to kind of find creative ways of doing that. I mean, the key things are always like who's eligible. So, for example, that you've got to be a UK resident or you've got to be over 18, when the promotion ends and where you can find the full terms and conditions. But sometimes, for example, if you're on Twitter, you've obviously got the character limitation, but you could take a photograph of a document that gives you more information and put that alongside the tweet. Mm. Things like that are quite a good way of it increasing the amount of information you're giving to the consumer.
Because I should imagine, I mean, do you deal with, what sort of size companies do you deal with?
Oh, I've dealt with a wide variety.
So it could be small.
It could be very, you know, a fairly small business that is just running their first ever social media promotion and wants to keep it really simple, you know. And when I was in my last paid job, I was working for a trade association who their members were marketing agencies doing sales promotions as well as a few brands. And so they're working for brands right up the scale, right up to people like Nestle and Kellogg's and, you know, name a household name, that probably one of those agencies will be running promotions for them.
So your ideal customer will span a huge area.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I can't believe it. Time is going so quickly. That's, I mean, I would imagine social media being a huge thing. And I think for our listeners out there, you know, they want to keep things, because there's been a lot of problems with competitions, haven't there? And it's great that you talk about it so much. But a lot of people want to do competitions on various platforms.
Yeah.
So they would come to you, would they? How would people... they'd just get in touch with you and explain their competition they'd like to run,
yes,
or their campaign.
Yeah.
And you could help them with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so we're coming to the end of the show again. I just can't believe it. It's just gone so quickly. And there's so, I think with law, there's so many areas that we could cover. You'll have to come back on again, because we haven't quite covered it all, have we? But so what I'd like to ask is, do you have any advice that you could offer to our listeners, particularly those who might want maybe to become a lawyer, or also those who would like to set up on their own?
Oh, well, yes. Well, in terms of if you want to become a lawyer, it's good if you're at school thinking about which A-levels to do. You can actually do quite a wide variety of A-levels. I mean, on my Law and German course, I actually did History, German and Religious Studies. There was another girl from my school on the same course who'd done Biology, Chemistry and German. So it shows that there's quite a mix. It's good to have an essay subject in there. So something like History or Geography.
Yes,
Or English, those kinds of things. A language is always really good as well.
And you've certainly got that with your German language, haven't
yes.
you? Yeah, so that must come in handy.
It has come in handy on occasion, and then you can do it either way. I mean, people do either do a law degree, like in the way I did, and make sure they get the qualifying subjects done, or you can do a degree in any subject, and then you can do what they call a conversion course, where they give you the you do the key subjects, and then it's all changing very soon. But at the moment, you then go on and do something called the legal practice course, where you learn the things you need to learn to be a solicitor, and then a 2-year training contract with a law firm. But they're quite difficult to get, and the whole system is changing. I'm not completely au fait with what's happening, but there is going to be a
huge changes.
There's going to be like a solicitor's qualifying exam, and it's all going to be done in a different way. And in terms of, you know, you can get... it's really good if you can get work experience with a law firm. But I always say to people that actually any kind of work experience is really helpful. Mm. It's just to show that you can work with people, and that you, like if you work in a cafe, you know, you understand how to deal with an awkward customer. You understand that on a hot day you sell more ice creams, that kind of thing.
Oh, Helen, that is, I'm sure our listeners think that's excellent advice. And I know they'd like to get in touch with you. How would they get in touch with you?
Probably the easiest way to get in touch with me, I don't have a website at the moment, would be via social media. So via my LinkedIn page, or my email address is helenmhart, all one word, @gmail.com.
What's your LinkedIn contact quickly?
I think it's Helen Mary H.
Okay, Helen, but it's Hart, H-A-R-T, isn't it? Thank you so much. So That's it, I'm afraid. So I'd like to thank all of our guests today on Just Women. That's Aarti Sharma Gray, Alex Williams and Sam Pantlin, the Naked Midwives, and our lovely lawyer Helen Hart today, and Dave Gemetis, who produced the show for us today, who I'd be lost without him. So all that remains for me to say is that we're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives. So if you know of someone who you think should be on your show, just email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we'll get in touch with them. If you get them on this future show, that would be great. And if you can see details of our previous and future guests on our website, which is brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen. And you can also find us on Facebook under Just Women at Brooklands Radio. So thank you for listening and join us again next week for Just Women. That's live at 1 p.m. Tuesday and repeated 8 p.m. Thursday. Goodbye from me, Mandy Dineley. Thanks again, Dave Gemetis, for manning the desk.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.